Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Real Life Real Crime Daily for Wednesday, February 1st. I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
And I'm Mike Agavino. Welcome back. We got a packed show today, and because of that, we're going to get right to it. And Woody, I think you want to start us off with something.
So, y'all, we've been telling you about Kayvon Washington and the alleged rape of Madison Brooks. We were very vocal about getting people to come forward and to use me personally as a conduit to go to law enforcement. If they were afraid to go to law enforcement or they were ashamed or whatever it may be, a lot of people reached out to us. And one of the alleged victims came out and she said that she was raped by Kayvon Washington in May or June of 2020, when she was 12 years old. And now, y'all, Kayvon's been arrested for that by the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office, and he's been booked for the rape of this 12-year-old, first-degree rape, which used to be called aggravated rape because of the age limit. And now he's been booked for the first-degree rape of this 12-year-old victim. Now, this came forward after we did the podcast, and after Karen Chawla did the interview with the victim when she disguised the victim's voice and the victim's mother. Walker Police Department originally said they didn't do anything because it was conflicting statements between the two, and now they have a witness that came forward and actually saw Kayvon go into the room with this victim. Okay, so he got booked into Livingston Parish Jail, and at this time, he has no bond, all right? So, but that's not the end of it, okay? Now, anytime you put yourself in the social spotlight like we do on Real Life Real Crime Daily, you are going to catch a little bit of blowback, if you will. And now, I submit to you that everybody in Angola has got somebody that loves them, right? Has a family member that's pissed off that they're there. Everybody I arrested in my career have family members, and certainly they're hurting and they don't like it. Y'all, now I'm gonna tell you what has been posted on social media by a guy allegedly named Kevin Washington. We have no way of proving who the post is, but I'm simply reading you what's on social media. You can go look it up yourself. This was screenshot to me and actually given to me by Karen Chawla, Unfiltered with Karen. And Kevin Washington, this person who's alleged to be Kevin Washington, says, "Why would you come after Kayvon without all the facts? Just wondering." Then continues with, "One more post for the day, exclamations. You put my grandson on your podcast, capital letters, calling him a serial rapist without his story. I want to know why this serial whore at the age of 12 or 13 were inviting boys to swim without an adult present. Why did they let the boys in without an adult present? You know why? Because she's sexually active and waited months to tell her mom because she assumed she was all capital pregnant. So someone told her to use the same old lame story, all capital, I was raped. So she wrote it in a notebook and told her mom to read it, exclamations. Guess what? Walker police didn't file charges because they knew it was shit. Because of the hype from your podcast and Unfiltered with Karen's story, they came back and make your serial racist ass happy and arrest him with this bogus charge without interviewing him. All capitals, only her. You need to check her history before you go and plaster my grandson's history. all capitals. Does this make you a serial racist or just looking for ratings? Remember, he has a family also that is hurting for everyone that is involved. Kayvon Washington is not the only one involved in this, exclamations. From his lovely grandmother, exclamations. Invite me and his dad on your podcast. No, y'all invited her and her mom. You serial racist cowards. Now, I'm reading this, and we don't know if this is someone making it up, but it is on social media. It is on Facebook. I want to address some issues here. One, we are in no way serial racist, okay? We're reporting the fact, just like I just told you, Kayvon Washington is now sitting in Livingston Parish Jail for rape of a 12-year-old. And back in the day, Walker Police Department had said that they had conflicting stories between two, say that between the two, the alleged victim and Kayvon, and so they didn't pursue it. Now they have a witness that's come forward and says she actually saw Kayvon go into the room with the alleged victim. Okay. Now, whoever wrote this, evidently you didn't go to law school. First of all, whoever wrote this, shame on you for saying this 12-year-old is a sexually active whore. All right. And in the state of Louisiana, you cannot consent to sex of any kind when you're 12 years old, period. All right. And this whole pregnancy thing and all this, whatever. You can say whatever you want to. It's a free country. But when you attack me personally and you call me a serial racist, I'm going to stand up and tell you that I'm not. Hey, it's America. I can say what I want to say too. All right. And looking for ratings, we're not reporting anything that all the news channels and Karen Chawla and everybody else has reported. We're reporting facts, public record. Kayvon Washington is under arrest, not only for Madison Brooks case, but for now this 12-year-old. Those are facts, people. I didn't make this up. I didn't go in and make these reports. I didn't allege or make this up and make this happen so this boy would go to jail. This young man would go to jail. The facts are what they are. Those are public records. Real Life Real Crime Daily didn't make it up. Nobody in this room made it up. Those were facts that are reported to law enforcement. We didn't do that, but we are going to continue to report the facts as they come out. And you better believe this case isn't over with. And I personally urge anybody that's a victim of any rape, if you're hesitant by anyone, if you're hesitant to go in and report it, you can reach out to Woody Overton. I will talk to you about it, and hopefully you will have the courage to stand up. Even though 98% of all rapes go unreported because people are afraid for whatever reason, or they're afraid somebody's going to come back and call a 12-year-old girl a whore, well, reach out to me, okay? And I'll talk to you about it. Sometimes you just need an ear to listen to, someone to listen to you. And if you want to move forward, I will personally walk you through. I am not afraid of pissed off family members. I've been doing it for over 30 years. Everybody I arrested has a family member that's pissed off at me. But I will continue to bring the facts. Facts, people. And we always said it's alleged that Kayvon did this, and everybody's innocent until proven guilty. But calling a 12-year-old a whore, whoever you were, whoever this person is, reports himself to be Kevin Washington, whatever, and shame on you, whoever you are. I'm not ever going to back down from this case. I'm not ever going to back down from helping a victim. I've been doing it for 30 years, and I'll do it to the day I die.
Woody?
Yeah.
Question. The Walker police, the first time this girl reported something, did they speak to anyone claiming to be a witness? Do we know?
No, they did not, and their official statement, and it was to Karen, is that they had conflicting stories, so the time they didn't pursue them. And let me tell you this. I've never had a rape victim and a suspect that didn't have conflicting stories.
Sure.
Okay. They also had an interview scheduled with her. She had an interview scheduled with the chief, David Addison, and right before the interview, they canceled it. Okay. This was on, I think, Friday. But they turned around later on that day and made the arrest, and they got him booked into the Livingston Parish Jail. So whatever Walker did or didn't do, man, I bet whoever didn't find this witness ahead of time, you know, is thinking about Madison Brooks every day.
Okay, so for clarity, a couple of years ago when this alleged victim went to Walker Police, the police, for whatever reason we don't know, never spoke to anyone claiming to be a witness.
That's correct.
They came forward, the same alleged victim came forward now, and Walker Police were able to corroborate parts of her story through this witness that has now come forward with her. Is that correct?
That is correct. And they were at least able to develop probable cause, which is 50% plus one, and get an arrest warrant for Kayvon Washington. Okay. So why they didn't do it back in the day, I don't know, whatever. They built the case enough now where they got an arrest warrant signed by a judge. That is a matter of public record. That is not something that Real Life Real Crime Daily made up, any of us made up. That is reported. It was reported years ago before the show even started. And now they followed up on it, and yes, hindsight's 2020. They followed up on it, and he has now been charged and sits in the Livingston Parish Jail for first degree rape, no bond.
So, let's just say that, suppose that the first time she had come forward, that Walker Police spoke to this witness back then, and made the decision that they've made now to make an arrest based upon that. If that arrest had resulted in a conviction,
we wouldn't be talking about Madison Brooks, or at least Kayvon Washington's involvement, alleged involvement with Madison Brooks.
Because he would have still been away had he been convicted.
That is correct. Even if he got juvenile life, which would have been the minimum. If they didn't try him as an adult, he would have had to serve till he was 21.
Okay.
So there it is. But again, people, I'm going to tell you, we're reporting facts, public record, stuff that has come through from other people. You don't hear me talking about all the messages from other alleged victims that I've gotten and received, because unless they go to law enforcement and make an official record, nothing can be done about it. This little 12-year-old girl reported years ago. Now they followed up on it, followed through. Kayvon Washington, first-degree rape, sitting in Livingston Parish Jail, no bond. 12-year-olds can't consent to have sex, people, period.
Wow. Why don't we move on?
Yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to get that off my chest. And again, for the record, we didn't create these charges. I didn't create these charges. And you want to be pissed off at me, you be pissed off at me. You want to threaten me, you threaten me, okay? Because I'm not scared of you.
On the episode we released on Saturday, we extensively covered the Tyre Nichols case in Memphis. The videos had come out the night before. That episode didn't release until Monday, the 30th of January. In the few days that have gone by since then, we have some additional things that have happened. Number one, Memphis Police Department terminated two additional police officers. Unclear yet whether charges will be brought on those officers officers or exactly what kind of charges will be brought against those officers. We also know that the fire department,
Memphis Fire Department,
terminated two EMTs. Again, same situation. We don't know if those people will be charged with any kind of crime yet. Right. But so we've gone from the original five officers to now four more people implicated. So you have nine total people, five of whom are under arrest,
let me say four additionals that have been terminated. For people that don't understand, most major cities, your EMTs are included in your fire department. Like in Livingston Parish and in these local areas around here, it's serviced by the EMTs or serviced by Acadian Ambulance and stuff like that. So Memphis has its own. The fire department is a division, but you have your first responders, your EMTs that were responding to these scenes also. They found numerous alleged department violations and the lack of care that they showed for Nichols on the scene, et cetera. And so there, that's the update on that.
One of the other things we were told is that the special unit, Scorpion, that these five officers were part of has been disbanded.
Yes, and that's not just, we weren't just told, that's been reported in all the national news.
Yes, not necessarily reported in all of those places. What Scorpion, the acronym, it's an acronym,
right, right.
What it actually stands for, which I think is worth repeating here if you've heard it before or giving it to you for the first time. Scorpion stood for Street Crimes Operation to Restore Peace in Our Neighborhoods.
Yeah, ironic, right?
Pretty darn ironic when you think about what happened here. So we have the unit disbanded. We have the five officers charged. We have four more that have now been terminated from their positions, and we await to find out what the fate of those people are and whether they will be charged. There's one other thing that came up that struck me, and that is that the Memphis Police Department, like many other police departments across the country, has been challenged to retain officers, has been challenged to be able to recruit officers. And like many other police departments across the country, they put certain incentives in place and they also adjusted standards in certain places to be able to recruit more people in. Two of the officers involved here, the two that are charged here, joined the Memphis Police Department after a very significant set of changes were made to their standards. That should make all of us just, I think it's a fine line, right? The Memphis Police Department was down 500 officers. We've talked about New Orleans before on this show, and we know the New Orleans Police Department is down 900 officers. When you're in that kind of position, you absolutely need to do some things with a sense of urgency to bring new officers on board, to streamline that onboarding process as much as you can, to accelerate the training as much as you can, to get these people on the street protecting people as quickly as possible. But there's a balance you've got to have between...
Right, that's been going on even back in 2013 when I retired from law enforcement. The standards were having to be adjusted because it was hard to get people to come to work as a police officer. But they also made incentives for other people to not retire so quickly, which that I submit to you that happens because of the state of way everybody looks at cops now. But on this story, even though these two came in after the standards had been changed, we don't know that they wouldn't have passed the standards, the old standards, though, to be fair.
Well, we do know that they didn't have the credentials that are part of those standards. So they didn't have the employment record or the amount of college credits
prior
was necessary. So the other pieces of it, we don't know. That will probably come out, but we do know that they didn't have that. And so I think we'll see ongoing debate about that. I think the early sort of talking points out there about training, I think those have been pretty well debunked, if the word's appropriate, because let's face it, anybody, whether you've been a cop or not, the basic rules of what you do when you pull somebody over for reckless driving, you wouldn't even need to learn in the first half hour of your training, because you know them just as a citizen, that what they did was as far away from what the book says the rules are as it could possibly be. And so I don't think we're going to hear about training so much as maybe a better balance between the loosening, if you will, of certain restrictions in recruiting and the acceleration of timeline on the onboarding piece. Some of that stuff is going to come into play.
Obviously, just real quick on that, the loosening of restrictions and stuff like that, the sad thing is, if they didn't do it to get more people in, the alternative is no police.
Absolutely.
Right.
That's why it's, as I said, it's a very fine line.
And so. And for Nichols and Maddie Brooks and this 12-year-old from Livingston Parish and everybody we talk about in these crimes, my heart goes out to the victims or alleged victims and their family members. And even to a certain extent, and it always has, the people that get locked up, their family members, because they're losing somebody also.
The last thing I'd like to point out on this is when we recorded on Saturday, the episode that was released on Monday, we were praying that we would see a Saturday night and a Sunday night without violence. We knew we would see protesting in many of the largest cities across the country, but as we sit here, it has been mostly peaceful. And again, I think the combination of the decisions made by the mayor and the chief of police to make these arrests and come public with the videos in the way that they did, and for the mother and stepfather to have come out. And
if anything comes out really positive out of that, and I read this somewhere, and I agree with it, I think that the getting out in front of it, being totally transparent with the public, doing the right things, not hide behind the blue wall if you're guilty or if you're dirty or if you're out there bad, handling that ahead of time and stopping the nationwide and even worldwide violence like after George Floyd, I think that's huge, and this should be the standard going forward. It should have always been the standard, I would guess, is being transparent, being honest, doing the right thing.
You guys know what May 12th is? Sunday, May 12th?
Mama's Day.
That would be correct. It's Mother's Day. So let me ask you, do you basically get your mom the same gift every year for Mother's Day? Maybe some flowers, some chocolates, maybe a robe or a framed photo, boring stuff, right?
Right.
Well, let me tell you about something that's totally cool and different from Mother's Day that will never wilt, spoil, or put an extra 10 pounds around her waist. I'm talking about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty unique. Cool, right?
Right.
Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. Your mom can either type a response to the email, or she can record her voice if she prefers to do that, or she can do both. Cool. And MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book, as well as an audiobook. And if you want, and she's up to the task technically, you know, the audiobook is a great extra thing to be able to do. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your future generations can treasure. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is kind of your chance to give her a way to share them. Every family's a little bit different, and in my family, we love to give each other a really hard time. So I've taken the approach in doing this of asking my mom to comment on some of those family moments that might be a bit embarrassing to other family members. Last week, my question was, Mom, did you feel guilty that day you hit me over the head with your wooden clog and Dad had to take me to the hospital for 8 stitches? Mom's response, back in the day, I was the disciplinarian of the house. And when you were 8 years old, you refused to get out of Nancy's, that's my sister's, plastic kiddie pool. I told you 10 times to get out of the damn pool. You didn't listen, so I chased you around the yard. And when you slipped, I nailed you right on the head. That was the last time you got in that kiddie pool. Of course, Dad had to lie to the ER and tell him that that you fell on your head, but I nailed you good. The entire process with my life in a book is simple, and in the end, Mom will have a great keepsake that can remain in your family for generations.
Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code RLRC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code RLRC for 10% off today.
All right, guys. We've never had an intervention on the show, but we're going to have one right now. And this applies to both of you guys, but perhaps a bit more to Mr. Overton.
Must be alcohol.
Well, you know, neither of you guys are 25 anymore, and sometimes you need to take a break away from the alcohol.
Oh, Lord.
So I want to talk to you about a healthy alternative to alcohol that can be just the right fix after a stressful day. You know, Woody, like a day after 10 crazies from Wisconsin come into town to kill 1,000 wild boars, and you idiots end up killing 1,000 Shiner Box at the same time.
That's going to happen.
Well, I know it is. And so I want to tell you about a product called Recess Mood. Think about it. Even the name sounds relaxing. Recess Mood is a delicious sparkling water infused with functional ingredients like mood-lifting magnesium and stress-balancing adaptogens, so you can relax without the alcohol or the hangover. Now, while Jim is looking up the meaning of adaptogens, I'll continue on. Real Life Real Crime and The Daily Show listeners get 15% off the Recess Mood Sampler Pack at takearecess.com/RLRC. That's takearecess.com/RLRC. You can enjoy Recess Mood after a busy day or whatever you need to relax and unwind. Recess Mood is made with real fruit and comes in 4 delicious flavors like strawberry rose and raspberry lemon. Those sound yummy.
Yeah.
It's only got 20 calories, doesn't have any sugar in it. So I don't know if you've ever had guilt, Woody, but if you do, Recess Mood could help you get rid of it.
Guilt, but I've had the pain of not having recess.
Okay, well, you deserve a healthier way to unwind. Head to takearecess.com/RLRC and get 15% off a Recess Mood sampler pack. It's your go-to alcohol replacement.
Some people may or may not be aware of some of the facts that have come out as people analyze this video. And of course, anytime you have a video come out, you're going to have a million people look at it at a million different angles, and they're going to really, really do a good job of breaking it down. One thing that you may find interesting, and one of the reasons that these EMTs were fired, was Tyree was on the ground for 23 minutes in handcuffs before a stretcher arrived on the scene. Now, a good rule of thumb when it comes to ambulances and medical attention is the average call time, typically, not in all cases, but typically you want to keep that under 10 minutes. Seconds count, people. Minutes count. This young man died 3 days later. That could have been the difference in whether he lived or died. 23 minutes, absolutely ridiculous, in handcuffs the entire time when it was apparent that he was in a bind, to say the least. So that's something important to know. Also, Tyree was given 71 separate commands by the officers over a 13-minute period. Now, here's the problem with that. Most of them were contradictory and unachievable. And what that means is, I'll give you an example of a few I noticed by looking at the video. Get down. Get down. He was already down. You can't get down any further than the street that he was laying on. As a matter of fact, he looked up at the officer several times and said, "I am down, I am down. Put your hands behind your back." Well, they're screaming at him, put his hands behind his back when two other officers have his arms extended out in front of him. You can't put your hands behind your back when people have your hands. These are called contradictory and unachievable commands. Go look at the video for yourself. I encourage you to do that and see how many you can find. I found at least 20 separate occasions where they told him to do something that was literally impossible to do. I had someone reach out to me yesterday and say, ask about him running. And my thought on that is, if you've got five men on top of you that you're pretty convinced they're going to kill you, you're running for your life at that point. And he was able to kind of squirm out of there somehow and get up and start running. And of course, he didn't get far. He basically made it across the street. They tackled him and then proceeded to punch him in the face. I don't know how many times. It looked like seven or eight times. I mean, direct in the face while other people are holding his hands. So
it's total bullshit.
There was a lot of brutality involved in this situation. It's ugly. It's hard to watch. But I thought those were really imperative to point out, especially with regard to the separate commands that he was given that were absolutely impossible to even achieve.
Moving right along. Let's move to the city of Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, peace.
An Atlanta Police Department officer the other night made a routine stop pulling over a car that had only one headlight operating. And so the person pulled over, the officer pulled over, got out of the squad car and walked over to the front passenger window of that car. And as he began his conversation with the person in the car, he realized something bizarre was happening behind him. He could hear something. And he turned and looked, and there was someone getting in his squad car.
That's what you call an oh shit moment.
I thought there was slang, inside baseball cop slang for that when you get your squad car stolen. So he yelled, "Yo, back up, get out of the car." And all of that can be picked up on the footage. And then on the police radio, he announced that someone had taken his patrol car. And so a...
That is a statement you never want to have to make. And I've never had mine stolen personally, but I've been there when others were stolen.
So you now have squad cars in pursuit, as well as a...
In pursuit of a squad car.
In pursuit of a squad car. And you have the APD has a helicopter above. The helicopter spotted the stolen vehicle and continued tracking it and giving instructions to the cars that were chasing. The suspect was driving, I guess, pretty recklessly and somehow flipped the squad car and flipped it to where it stopped right in the middle of train tracks. So now the stolen squad car is inverted and it is laying across train tracks. Several of the squad cars that were in pursuit arrive at the location and get out with some urgency to begin to pull this gentleman out. And wow. Then
why was it urgent?
Well, then they I'm laughing and I shouldn't because this could have gone very, very badly. But they look up and see that they've got a Norfolk Southern locomotive headed their way on that track. So it's on a crash course for the overturned squad car.
Let me interrupt you quick so people know, and I bet y'all don't know this, the trains are not allowed to stop for police cars. I know there's a bridge out up ahead. I just found it at nighttime. The train's coming. I know the train's coming. I pull my shit on alongside of them, a wave and holler at them and say, "Hey, the bridge is out." Guess what? They don't have to stop. You can park on the track. They don't have to stop. Do you know the only way you can stop a train legally, the way they have to stop, is by lighting a flare and putting it in the middle of the track?
Really?
Yep. There
you
go.
You learn something new every day. So upon seeing the oncoming locomotive, the officers went into an even more urgent rescue mode. They only had moments to get this guy out of the car. The guy's name was Michael Parker. He's 29 years old. Parker is now behind bars in Fulton County Jail because they got him out again moments before the squad car was struck by the oncoming locomotive. Atlanta Police Department Sergeant Chaffee was quoted as saying, "We're very proud of the actions of our officers. This could have gone a number of different ways." Yes, it could. So what do you think Sergeant Chaffee was proud of the actions of all of his officers?
Well, shit happens. I always said it's the greatest show on earth. The squad cars get stolen. I was so thankful when we first got a remote control access to our vehicles so you could lock it every time you get out of the car, because otherwise you're out on the scenes. You may have to be fighting someone and another bad guy jumps in your shit and runs off with it. I'm not going to name any names, but I know it's happened several times to several friends of mine. And I guarantee the sergeant's happy of two things. Well, I'm sure there'll be a policy and procedure that comes out behind this incident. That vehicle, I can assure you, was a total loss getting hit by a locomotive. So the insurance company isn't going to like that. But those guys are heroes for going to get this asshole out of the car. They could have left him there and been like, there's your sentence and jury.
Well, let's play a little what if on that. I'm just curious. Let's suppose they couldn't get him out and the train ends up killing him. Is there, so in this day and age, I wouldn't be shocked to see Parker's family filing a lawsuit against the Atlanta Police Department for negligence in allowing him to so easily steal their squad car, and then negligence in not getting him out fast enough before he was hit by the train. Any thoughts on that?
My thought on it is, they probably would have sued because that's the way the world works today. But if he would have got killed, they couldn't get him out, they at least would have tried. And that's when the pen is mightier than the sword and you have to really write a good report.
So you guys been paying attention to this Murdaugh case, this case out of South Carolina, this family in Low Country, South Carolina, that for generations has been the solicitor, has three generations of solicitors, like district attorneys in this area.
Around here, the solicitors are usually looking for something else. But yeah.
I don't know that that's that far away from what this solicitor is.
10 for the ring, 2 for pussy.
Solicitors, solicitors are like district attorneys. And
that's a Eastern Seaboard thing.
Yeah. We just call them district attorneys here.
Well, this is one of those cases that it drags on so long. Yeah. This has been unfolding over a multiple year period, and we're quote unquote finally at the trial, but it's really, we're finally at a trial.
Yeah.
Because this guy has been into so much stuff over the last three. I mean, it's pretty unbelievable. We are drawn, this country, everyone in this country is drawn to a story like this, the fall from grace of this powerful family. They had all the money, all the power, heritage, generational wealth, all the influence, all of this stuff. And a guy who portrayed himself as a model citizen and a leader in the multi-county area. I mean, my God, when his life unravels, it unravels in a form I've never seen anything unravel in.
It's an onion you can't find the core to, right? You just keep peeling it back, and there's more and more and more. And it was, you know, you asked a question a minute ago, Mike, which was, are we even familiar with it? And I'll be honest, I remember, when the first talks were about the Murdaugh case, and it kind of slipped from memory, and it's been dragging on so long that it's just one of those things. I didn't have a whole lot of knowledge on. And when we discussed in the trial came up for this case, I really got into it and went down a rabbit hole with it. And wow, man,
it's crazy.
Folks, if you're not familiar with the Murtaugh case, get familiar with it. And we're going to do our best to get you familiar with it, because this is a heck of a story here that is unfolding right before our eyes.
Yeah.
Well, and as I said, it's been evolving over a multi-year period to the point that there's already been at least one Dateline. There may even have been two. There's already been a 2020 special. People Magazine already did a cover story on it. That's all back in 2021. And at the end of this month, Netflix is launching a series.
On top of that, I think there's at least 10 different podcasts dedicated just to the subject. Just to the Murtaugh case.
It's crazy. So what we're going to try and do is give the Real Life Real Crime Daily audience a feel for the major pieces of this that have evolved. Because this trial that America is now tuned into is a trial for the murders of Alex. Sometimes people say Alec. It's weird. Alex Murtaugh's wife, Maggie, and his son, Paul. That's what he is on trial for right now. But to understand how things got to where this guy could be on trial for murder of his wife and son, you have to understand everything that went on before that led to it. And if it starts anywhere, let's call the 85 years leading up to 2018 or so, 2015, let's call it. The 85 years or so prior to that, this was the biggest name that you could say in this part of South Carolina. And then something happens in the summer of 2015.
Yeah, so as Mike just told you, that name in that area was the name everybody knew. Their family name contained all the power. And Alex Murtaugh was actually the solicitor for the 14th Circuit in South Carolina that represented five counties there. And so he had a lot of power. He was the district attorney for that area. Now, in 2015, as Mike just stated, Stephen Smith, who was 19, is found dead. He was hit by a vehicle, presumed. And there was a lot of issues with that right from the beginning. Number one, Stephen Smith was a gay man in an area that does not embrace, you know, gay, lesbian groups. As a matter of fact, South Carolina, you may be surprised to learn, is one of only two states that does not have a hate crime law still in this day and age. So he gets hit by a vehicle, and there was a lot of strange things right from the beginning of that. First of all, his shoes were still on. And I'm talk to Woody real quick. How rare is that when you get hit by a vehicle that your shoes are on?
I've never seen someone, I'm not talking about like, when one of my classmates at LSU Academy was walking across the crosswalk and got hit at 5 miles an hour. But I've never seen anyone get struck with a vehicle with any amount of force where they didn't lose at least one shoe. Just does not happen. The first thing you're going to lose, people, no matter how tightly they're tied are your shoes, or anyone ejected from a vehicle, I've never seen them not lose a shoe.
So that was strange right off the bat. They investigated this case and no arrest is made. Okay. Now you may wonder what this situation would have to do with the Murtaugh family. A young kid gets hit by a car. It happens other places. They don't tie it into a family name. But in this case, Alec Murtaugh's son, Paul, it was alleged there was chatter that he had a relationship, romantic relationship with Stephen Smith, and that Stephen Smith might possibly go public with that in their town. And so there was a lot of chatter that this was a way to avoid that coming out. Now, So it's important to definitely note that no arrest was ever made in that case. It was investigated. They basically said he had got hit by a vehicle, and they never found the vehicle, and no arrest was made.
That's crazy.
Well, and Jim, you've already told us that we're not exactly talking about the most socially liberal area of the country. And so we have a powerful family, and we have the death of a young man who's connected or loosely connected to the son. So that's a
allegedly, yeah.
Allegedly. Well, let's keep going. So put a little mark down. That's 2015. We're going to go and accelerate to basically decent years between 2016 and 2017 for the Murtaughs. So we fast forward to February 2nd of 2018 when Gloria Satterfield, age 57, who was the housekeeper nanny for the Murtaugh family for more than two decades, aided allegedly by dogs that got in her way, fell down a flight of stairs in the Murtaugh family home on Moselle Road, and she got badly injured. In fact, she got so injured that 3 weeks later, on February 26th, she passed away from her injuries. According to court documents, Alex Murtaugh told Satterfield's sons that, quote, he was responsible and plans to sue himself so that they are financially taken care of. The family claimed that they never received, this is the Satterfield family,
right,
at the time, claimed they never received any money.
And it's important to mention that this was not the tomfoolery that we'll really get into. As a matter of fact, the children of Miss Satterfield actually spoke to her, and she said she fell down the stairs after tripping over four dogs. So this wasn't a situation where, oh, he pushed her down the stairs or something like that. So I don't want you to get focused on that. The fact of the matter is what we just told you happened. It's the after effects of that in which Murtaugh actually hatches a plan to sue himself for negligence. Maybe he left the dogs in her way or whatever, and she falls down the stairs, and he tells, you know, the kids, obviously he's going to enrich himself on this plan, but he says, he may, you know, said, we've got a $10 million suit, and I'm going to keep $3 million and give you $7 million, and I'm going to sue myself. This is real stuff.
Right. And I think that it comes out later on about not giving all the money and stuff like that.
None of the money, as a matter of fact.
That is all true. And the part about the trained dogs that tripped her at command is not true. And I'm glad you didn't include that in that piece, Jim. One of the passengers on the boat, who was the girlfriend of one of Paul Murtaugh's close friends, by the name of Mallory Beach, who was 19 years old, was thrown off of the boat when it made when it crashed into the bridge. And in the aftermath, she was unaccounted for. And they spent the night and a number of days. In fact, it wasn't until March 3rd of 2019 when her body was actually discovered in a marsh area close to where they had hit that bridge. And so we have in the course of a four-year period, we have Stephen Smith's death. We have Gloria Satterfield's death. We have Mallory Beach's death. In the case of Mallory Beach, Paul Murtaugh is the driver of the boat.
There's a lot more that goes on that night, like the Murtaugh family members showing up and the influence that they did on law enforcement and everything else, and the actions of the driver of the boat. And so I assume we'll get into this in future episodes.
The Dateline that came out in 2021, and obviously this is Dateline, but in the Dateline, they allege that Alex Murdaugh arrived on scene pretty immediately and began trying to get other young men who were on the boat to claim that they were the driver. So he, right off the bat, is worrying about himself and his family. Absolutely. And going to two other families that, you know, weren't at his social level, right, to basically say, I'll take care of you, right, if you step up and, right, say it was your son and, that I mean, was driving the boat.
That's hugely important towards the story. And also in the days in the aftermath of they never even contacted the son's alleged best friend, whose girlfriend it was, who was ejected from the boat and all that. And there's just total shit show of circumstances, and it's a whole lot more than what you're being told today, people.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
A month later, understandably, the family of Mallory Beach files a wrongful death lawsuit against Alex Murdaugh, against the Parker company that owned the convenience store that served them the liquor that night. At they also charge Buster Murdaugh as well, who is the other brother that was there that night. A month later, Paul, who is 20 years old at the time, is indicted on charges of boating under the influence, causing death, and two counts of boating under the influence, causing great bodily injury.
Now, that's a big deal, y'all, because remember this family, the Murdaughs, they extremely powerful. Well, Alex Murdaugh's son, he is the district attorney. His son gets indicted for, you know, all of those charges that Mike just read. That is no easy task. I mean, there was a lot that had to go into that because of who these people were.
A month later.
Absolutely. Yep. And look, the Good Old Boy Network, and that's what it's unofficially called. I grew up in it.
Card-carrying member.
Seen it.
Just kidding. And
Lucky Sperm Club.
No, yeah, right. But I've seen it. But the things that you could get away with 30 years ago, 50 years ago, however long ago, you can't get away with them today.
2 days ago.
Yeah, just kidding. Yeah. Can't get away with them today. And, you know, again, this is so much information on this case. We're going to have to feed it to you in pieces.
Born on third base and thought he hit a triple.
Right.
Yeah. I hadn't heard that one.
Three weeks later, Paul Murdaugh pleads not guilty to all of these charges.
Which you're going to do. You're always going to plead not guilty. I mean, tell him what he is.
You're not going to plead guilty.
I did it. Yeah, you're not.
I did it. Don't let my high dollar defense attorney make his money, and maybe it gets thrown out. Maybe we buy off a witness, or maybe some probable cause affidavit gets thrown out or whatever. So, yeah, no attorney is going to plead their client guilty without an incentive.
Right. Now it gets good.
So now, for an extended period, like 2 years, there is a bunch of stuff going on. There's a mediation that is attempted in the, it's a court-ordered mediation in the wrongful death lawsuits. And that mediation fails. They cannot agree. And because they cannot agree, the case then is bound for trial. So June 4th of 2021 is when that mediation is scrapped and the parties become aware that they're going to go to trial. 3 days later, June 7th, 2021, Alex Murdaugh discovers the bodies of his son Paul, allegedly discovers the bodies of his son Paul and wife Maggie at their at the 1,700-acre hunting lodge on Moselle Road, the same location where Mrs. Satterfield had fallen down the steps.
Yeah. It's not allegedly. He did.
He definitely
discovered him. he discovered after he killed him or before.
Right.
Let's fast forward to February 24th, 2019, when an inebriated Paul Murdaugh decided after he had taken a group of friends with him to a party and stopped off at a bar after the party, decided that he was still in good enough shape to get behind the wheel of the family boat that even he had transported everybody.
Even though several of them told him he couldn't. And the family boat, for the record, is a bay boat.
Yeah. And not Cruiser. Long.
It's a bay boat, center console bay boat. I remember, if I have a photographic memory.
You're right. That would be correct. Not long after they leave the bar where they have stopped, Paul, at the wheel, crashes the boat into a bridge, into a pylon of a bridge near Paris Island. Okay. So Alex makes the 911 call.
So we're going to play the 911 call for you.
Okay, you said 4147 Moselle Road in Allison?
Sir?
You said 4147 Moselle Road in Allison?
Yes, sir. 4147 okay. Moselle Road.
Stay on the line with me, okay? Hurry. Yes, sir. Stay on the line with me, okay?
Connor County Communications.
Collison, I have an Alex Murdaugh on the line, caller from 4147 Moselle Road. He's advising that his wife and child was shot.
Okay, and sir, give me the address again.
It's 4147 Moselle Road. I've been up to it now. It's bad.
Okay. Okay, and are they breathing?
No, ma'am.
Okay, and you said it's your wife and your son?
My wife and my son.
Are they in a vehicle?
No, ma'am. They're on the ground out at my kennel.
Okay, and did you see anyone? Okay, is he breathing at all?
No.
Is she? Okay, do you see anything? Do you see anyone in the area?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am.
What color is your house on the outside? What color is your house on the outside?
It's white. You can't see it from the road.
Okay, is it a house or a mobile home?
It's a house.
Okay, and what is your name?
My name is Alex Murdaugh.
Okay, and did you hear anything, or did you come home and find them?
No, ma'am. I've been gone. I just came back.
Okay, and was anyone else supposed to be at your house?
No, ma'am.
Now, you just heard that 911 call, and let me tell y'all something that not a lot of people realize about 911. When you call 911 and you hear the ringing, it's actually recording at that point. Right. People don't realize that. They think it's not recording until someone picks up the phone. That's why you always hear the rings when someone calls 911. Well, you know what was missing from that whole 911 call? You heard how he was all panicked and fired up. The second that operator picked up, he was screaming, oh, my gosh, my son, my wife, all those sorts of things. There was no panic when it was ringing. It was only when they picked up. There was no screaming, nothing. He was completely calm before someone answered that phone, and then he went into that panic. I found that very interesting.
Yes. Most people don't know that.
But on Real Life Real Crime Daily, we do.
That's right.
My goodness. This guy. June 8th, 2021, the authorities confirmed the identities of the deceased bodies, referring to the incident as a double homicide.
However, there's no threat to the public, Mike.
They announced that there's nothing to see here to the public, which is very interesting.
Strange.
Because if there's a double murder and you have no idea who committed the double murder, why wouldn't there be a threat to the public?
Yeah, so it's not necessarily strange if they came out and said there's, you know, any case when you know who did it, you come out and you say, hey, you remember in the Idaho murders, the police came out and they said, we've got the guy, the panic, no need to panic anymore. Right. We've got the guy. In this case, they came out with a double homicide, but yet nobody had been arrested, but yet there's no threat to the public. I found that quite interesting.
Just a few days later, the Murdaugh family, very, very concerned about the double homicide and wanting to bring whoever committed this crime to justice as quickly as possible. Alex's brothers, Randy and John, appeared on an exclusive interview with ABC News where they pled with the public to come forward with any information that they had. And they also said they don't know whether the family has enemies, but that Paul, remember, Paul had driven the boat the night that the beach girl had died. And so they say they don't know whether the family has enemies, but that Paul Murdaugh had received threats.
Yep, kind of convenient.
Kind of convenient, yes.
Right. Definitely kind of convenient.
Well, then they come out right after that, and they issue or they release some very, very heavily redacted documents showing what deputies discovered the night of those murders. Shortly after that, SLED, which is the
South Carolina Law Enforcement Division.
SLED, basically, which in South Carolina, that's what they're known as.
It's like the state police.
So they came out on the 23rd of June, 2021, and based off of the information of the Murdaugh investigation, they say they're looking into the Stephen Smith case that we discussed just a minute ago from way back in 2015.
No such thing as a coincidence.
Right. So somewhere in their search through the home or wherever else and looking for evidence, they found something that connected them, at least led to a possible connection to the 2015 death of Stephen Smith.
That was exactly what I was thinking. And almost no doubt about it.
Could be electronic communications, text, sexting, whatever.
Piece of clothing, anything to time. So we're speculating there.
Back in my day, it would have been Polaroid.
Could have been that. So on June 25th, 2021, the Murdaugh family, they announced a $100,000 reward for information leading to the arrest in the double homicide.
Pretty safe award. If you didn't know, you never got to pay it.
And look, if y'all are paying attention here, it's mounting up on the Murdaugh family. These are five separate incidents, y'all. So July 22nd, 2021, SLED releases the 911 call that we just played for you the night Paul and Maggie were killed. That obviously creates a bunch of buzz, and People Magazine just a little over a month later does a cover story featuring the double homicide of Paul and Maggie Murdaugh. Unfortunately, there was some other story at that time regarding J-Lo marrying Ben Affleck So no one reads that story. They want to know about J-Lo and Ben Affleck, and it kind of gets
I remember that buried. J-Lo, Ben Affleck.
Order. There you go.
Mesmerizing.
I just remember Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, that's right. And so
she's older than me, man. Have you seen her abs? They're stupid. Not to mention
Woody, she's working out 10 hours a day. That's an hour and a half more than you work out.
Yeah.
I have a nickname for her. It's Jenny from the block.
Wait, this next one, though, this is ding, ding, ding right here. So after all that, it's actually the same day that the People magazine comes out and is on the stands. The South Carolina Attorney General's office drops all charges against Paul Murdaugh in the death of Mallory Beach due to his own death. So, Woody.
Convenient.
Yeah, so if there's a wrongful death suit against this wealthy family
He's already dead. Potentially
getting a bunch of money.
You know what his lawyer said when they called? He said,
He'd be dead. Okay, so, yeah.
It'd be dead. Can't prove it.
That one deserves an extra red check mark if you're writing down the timeline of events.
So we're going to leave it right there for today, but we're going to be back in 2 days, and we're going to give you kind of the rest of this story and bring you all the way up to current events with the Murdaugh case. I'm telling you, don't go anywhere. It gets really crazy.
You've heard it everywhere else, but you haven't heard it Real Life Real Crime Daily style.
No, you have not.
Folks, we always, especially when we have an intense segment like the last one, we always like to end on a little bit of a lighter note. And so Jim's got a new segment for us. Well, have we done one of these before? No, I don't think we have.
We have not.
Hot bad guys. Who's our hot bad guy?
You're talking about me.
It's Jim. I thought it was me.
You're a good guy. You're
we have
good
a competition
guy.
Again.
That's when the hot good guys come on, Woody Overton.
Yeah.
Hot bad guys. New little segment we're going to do every now and then on Real Life Real Crime Daily. And we're going to tell you a little bit about Jeremy Meeks. And you may remember Jeremy Meeks, ladies. He's a former member of the Crips Street Gang. He was arrested in 2014 after a gang sweep called Operation Ceasefire in Stockton, California. And for those unfamiliar with Stockton, California, Diaz Brothers, UFC from Stockton. You know what I'm talking about if you're a UFC fan. Nate and Nick. Anyway, so after the police posted Mr. Meeks' photo mugshot on Facebook, within 24 hours, y'all, get this. He had more than 15,000 likes and 3,700 comments, just about all of them being from the females.
And that was a long time ago, right? That was a lot of
yeah, back then, that was like viral. Most of the women were commenting, ooh, look at that guy, and he's so fine, and all this sort of stuff. So the next day, on June 19th, BuzzFeed, which is a basically a news and entertainment blog, recognized his mugshot as a meme. And back then, BuzzFeed was the meme site, right? So he's getting popular already. Now, on Friday, June 20th, Twitter fans created the hashtag Felon Crush Friday in honor of Meeks' mugshot. Yes. Nice. And I know there's some women out there listening right now, and you're like, I remember Meeks.
Or they're Googling him right now.
They're guaranteed they're Googling. Now, trending or not.
Meeks steamy.
Meeks. Trending or not, on February 5th, 2015, Meeks was convicted by a federal judge on account of being a felon in possession of a firearm.
Project Exile.
So he gets incarcerated. He serves 13 months on the sentence, and he gets released in 2016, but it only gets better from there for Mr. Meeks. Now, while incarcerated, he signed an agreement with White Cross Management, and his first modeling headshot was published in June of 2016. On February 13th, 2017, he made his runway debut. He did a bunch of modeling. He even appeared on Tommy Hilfiger's Spring 2018 fashion show in Milan on February 25th. But get this, y'all. Get this. September 2019. Fashion Concept GmbH, which is a fashion company in Frankfurt, Germany, announced a $15 million partnership with Meeks to build a fashion line. All this from a mugshot, his gang mugshot way back in 2015.
Well, you know, one thing he's missing out of all of that? Playgirl. So he missed out on $1,500.
Is there such a thing anymore?
I doubt it. Not that I already know what that is.
So Meek Dreamy gets $15 million.
And you may wonder, where's he at today?
Where is he at today, Jim?
He's still with them. He's still with White Cross Management. They continue to manage him. And there is no telling how much money Mr. Meeks is worth. So not only is he too sexy for his shirt, he is rich and too sexy for his shirt.
And I guarantee he's not hanging back out on the block in Stockton, right?
Guaranteed.
Right. Well,
so there you go.
Good way to end things.
That's it.
All right. We'll see you back on Friday. And I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Woody Overton.
And I'm Mike Agavino.
Real Life, Real Crime Daily. Peace.
Shabusiness.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.